Hello and welcome to Ed Talks, the podcast from King Edward School Birmingham and King Edward's High School for Girls, where I talk to old Edwardians about their time at school and what they did next. My name is Ben Anderson and I am a podcast producer. I run a company called Sound Rebel. I spent 10 years in the UK's radio industry, but now love working for myself. And I've been delighted to be asked to do this for King Edward's. Today, I am joined by an old Edwardian from the boys' school, James Forrest, otherwise known as the Mountain Man. James, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Ben. Nice to be here.
And you're called the Mountain Man for a very good reason. Well, your book is The Mountain Man, the book that won the Book of the Year at the 2019 The Great Outdoors Reader Awards. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
And that book was written about your record-breaking 6 months. You climbed 446 mountains in 6 months, which is just bonkers. Since then, you've climbed all 1,001 mountains across the UK and Ireland in the fastest known time. That's over 5,000 kilometres, and you've climbed the height of 30 Mount Everest. Is that right?
Sounds about right, yeah.
And most recently, you've broken the speed record for climbing the Three Peaks unsupported. So the name, which was it given to you by the Telegraph, the name The Mountain Man?
Yeah,
it's definitely a good one.
I like it. It's nice to have been nicknamed that. I feel like it would be very arrogant if I was to call myself the Mountain Man, just sort of self-proclaimed. but it was in a Sunday Telegraph article about one of my adventures, and the journalist nicknamed me Mountain Man. So I mean, my brother, who also went to King Edward's, Tom, he says that in the UK there aren't really any proper mountains like there are in the Alps or the Himalayas, so I should really be nicknamed Hill Boy, but I prefer Mountain Man.
It's always nice to have the support of your family, isn't it?
Exactly, yeah.
But where did this all start for you? Have you always been an adventurer, or is this something that you found later on in life?
I mean, I've always loved being outside. I love being active and had that within me from a young age. But actually, as I was growing up, I kind of channeled all that energy into playing sports. I was obsessed with sport as a young kid and as a teenager and through university. But in later life, probably from the age of 30 onwards, kind of channeled it into hiking and outdoors adventures. So it's kind of been a bit of a transition. You know, when you get a bit older, you know, you have to retire your football boots and and pick up some hiking boots and become a rambler. So maybe that's what I've done.
Well, let's take you back to those early days. You left King Edward's in 2002, I believe. So you were at school kind of back end of the 1990s. What was school like then for you? Did you enjoy it? You'd have to say yes, just because it's a school podcast.
I absolutely loved it. I did really enjoy it. I was quite a kind of focused, hardworking young man. And so I kind of like channeled all my energy into trying to get good grades. And also, as I said, I love sports. So I played tennis and rugby mostly. I was in the first team at rugby. Played in the tennis first team, but I loved all sports. I loved all the house competitions. I was kind of pretty kind of sporty individual. So that was where I really kind of channeled a lot of my energy. Also loved playing football in the parade ground. That was one of my favourite memories. My dad was the school doctor, so that was a rather traumatic experience for me. But besides that, yeah. It was good. So, yeah.
I was a few years behind you. So okay. When I went on your Instagram and I recognised you straight away. Okay. I think it must be from the first team rugby.
Oh, right.
Did you do anything else outside of that? Were you kind of CCF or was it leadership?
I
can see you in a black leadership jacket and I might be getting
really?
The wrong person.
Yeah. I mean, I did. I wasn't in the CCF. A lot of things that people think I would have done now that I've taken the paths that I have and became a really outdoorsy person, I didn't necessarily follow at school. So I wasn't in the CCF. I didn't do Duke of Edinburgh or things like that. But I did go on quite a few trips when I was at school, I did do quite a lot of outdoor activity, kind of hiking, skiing type trips. So I always had that adventurous streak within me. And yeah, it's just sort of flourished in later life, so to speak. But I have some really fond memories of some of the trips that I did. I can remember particularly doing the Tour de Mont Blanc, which is a long hike through, I think it's through three countries, France, Switzerland and Italy, around the Mont Blanc Massif. And I did that, I think, when I was maybe in Reims or something like that. And that was like an amazing experience. And I can definitely think I can trace the seeds of some of my passion for the outdoors to some of those early days.
And were you really good at geography?
I was quite good at geography, yeah. I didn't do it at university or anything like that, but I was pretty good at, reasonably good at geography, yeah.
So what did you do at university? I really want to get onto, there's a great line on your website that I love.
Oh, yes.
Where you say that you went from a bored office worker to an intrepid adventurer. So mm-hmm. I really want to know, what was your kind of start in terms of your career?
What was my path, yeah. Well, at university, I did history. So I basically just chose the subject that I enjoyed the most at school and didn't really have a career path in mind. So I enjoyed the studies at university. I enjoyed doing it, but it didn't kind of like lead me down a particular path or particular vocational kind of, I wasn't on a vocational ladder, so to speak. And then after university, I ended up working in the charity sector. So I was in a management position in a charity called Sport for Life UK, which is based in Birmingham and works with young people, helping disaffected young people through sport. And I was in that job. So I lived in Birmingham. I worked in Birmingham, like commuted into this near the city centre, and was in that job for not far off 10 years. And I don't want to be kind of like overly critical of that life, because it was fine and it was good in many ways. But for me, it just didn't quite fit right. And something felt a bit kind of amiss. I guess I'd kind of ended up on this ladder that I was just moving along without really meaning to be there. So as I said, I didn't have a like specific career path in mind when I left university. I didn't really know where I wanted to go in my life, so to speak. And just then started following like, oh, I'm an adult now. I've got adult responsibilities. I need to get a good job. I need to get a house. I need to get a good car. I need to get a pension. I need to progress. And yeah, something was just a kind of a bit amiss with me, and I wasn't really too kind of happy with the life that I'd created for myself. I just kind of floated along into it, really. And I was living in a city and working in an office. And so I had a kind of very office-centric, city-centric existence. I kind of felt like I wanted something a bit more from life, or kind of wanted to take a different path. And as it all happened, kind of changed it all in my 30s, and I'm in a very different position now than I was back then.
So was it a kind of gradual thing for you, just that kind of chipping away almost, you're in the rat race, or was there something that happened that made you go, got to get away from this?
I mean, it'd be nice if it was this kind of real epiphany moment. I think people kind of often want it to be that. But no, it wasn't that. It was, like you say, a more gradual thing. It was more of a kind of slow realization, and then a kind of relatively slow process of figuring out how I wanted to change my life and how to make it work financially and how to... And I guess kind of plucking up the courage to take that leap of faith and do it. So, yeah, eventually kind of decided that's what I wanted to do and figured out a way to do it. And it all worked out really well for me in the end.
OK, so where do you start with something like that? Because, you know, we've got current students listening to this podcast, but also old eds from the Boys and Girls School too. There might be mm-hmm. someone who's in that career who, you know, thought, yep, need the pension, need the car, etc. Mm-hmm. Actually, I don't want to do this.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you start when that kind of feeling starts to creep in and you realise that you do need to change your life?
Yeah, I think you could go one of two ways. You could go for the kind of like drastic option and just suddenly change everything really quickly and just kind of dive headfirst into the deep end. I kind of feel like for most people and for many people, it's maybe more about kind of small changes. So if you feel like you're lacking some kind of variety and verve in your life and you want something a bit different, well, maybe you can achieve that by just switching from working 5 days a week to 4 days a week. And then you've suddenly got 52 extra days a year to play with, and maybe you really can chase your dreams and achieve something you really wanted to do over an entire year, and you can still stay financially stable and have a bit of routine and a bit of stability and security in your life. So there's kind of loads of different ways you can go about it. And I did like small steps before I made bigger changes. So kind of reduced my hours at work, started dabbling with different lines of work and figuring out whether I enjoyed that, whether I wanted to go down that path. And yeah, it was all kind of small stages and kind of like relatively calculated risks, so to speak. So you don't have to kind of take this crazy leap of faith necessarily. You can take easier, simpler, more bite-sized kind of steps towards your end goal. The way it actually worked for me is that I kind of got to a stage where I wanted to take some time away and went for this slightly kind of drastic approach. So almost had a kind of gap year in my 30s. So sold my house, left the job and went traveling around the world for 6 months, and then volunteered on a farm in the Lake District, believe it or not, for another 6 months. So I had kind of 12 months off. That was kind of really great, but for me, that actually kind of really helped me on my longer journey. So the problem with that kind of approach is that it was like 1 year of hedonism, like no work, just pursuing your passions, doing whatever you want. So I did loads of trekking, loads of mountain climbing.
Sounds like a very healthy hedonism.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, a straight edge hedonism. But it was... that was an amazing kind of year, but it was a bit of a kind of boom and bust situation. So spent loads of money. It was completely financially unsustainable and got home and kind of wondered, oh crap. Like, what do I do next? Do I just go back and slot into the old life that I used to have, or do I try and change things? And so while that was a good experience, my actual kind of more meaningful journey was kind of figuring out how I could try and live more adventurously and pursue my passions, but do it around an everyday life and do it in a more sustainable way, and to do it for the next 5 years or the next 10 years or for the rest of my life, rather than just running away from things and having an amazing year. And so that's what I did after my gap year. I ended up moving to the Lake District. I sort of started a new career and began on these journeys of these big kind of mountain climbing adventures that I fitted around my everyday life. And that's the kind of more, perhaps more inspiring and more impressive journey, if you will, that I've been on, rather than just kind of the gap year. But the gap year kind of taught me that, and I learned from that and kind of progressed in a different way afterwards.
It's a really interesting story, because you know, you're very careful to say that you were careful, but at the same time, it does ultimately, you do have to make a leap of faith if you want to change something, don't you? It's terrifying when you do it. I did it personally. Always wanted to run a business, and I always wanted it to be a creative business. My skills were audio, so podcasting, you know, 10 years ago, podcasting was around, but it wasn't really as accessible as it was popular as it is now. People just weren't listening to them. It was very much a kind of hobbyist's activity. I think I was lucky in the sense that podcasts grew in popularity, so therefore it gave me a bit more of a nudge on that leap to go, well, actually, if you make stuff, there are audiences out there to listen to it. But it is still terrifying nonetheless. I think I'd like to ask you about, as we're both in our 30s, Do you think it's a generational thing, that the pension, the house, the car? Is it something that was to do with school? I feel like people who are 18 now, and I've gone back to the school quite a lot, and, you know, even just the reaction we get to this podcast, people aren't necessarily going down the set professional routes these days, or at least they're not, when they're kind of 16, 17, thinking what would they like to do with their lives, what university course would help them do it. University courses aren't always applicable, of course. But there seems to be more of a kind of a variation in, you know, I've got lots of friends who are doctors, lots of friends who are lawyers, lots of friends who did PPE. But it doesn't seem to be. Is it a generational thing? Is it that platforms like, you know, podcasting, platforms like Instagram, for example, has that made more unusual careers, let's say, more accessible?
It may well be. I would agree with you that at school there, I guess there was maybe this expectation that you might follow one of the main career paths, you know, a doctor or a lawyer or a accountant or those kind of classic professional careers. And none of those kind of appealed to me so much. And I guess looking back, I was really good when I was on a really kind of capable and felt comfortable when I was on a clear ladder. So at school you're on a very clear structured process of what you're supposed to be doing. So you're doing, you know, GCSEs, then AS, then A level, and then the same at university. I kind of felt like this real, I just never doubted that I was going to go through all those steps and that's what I needed to do. But then after that, after university, I felt a little bit lost, like I didn't know what ladder I was on, which direction I was meant to be going, was I making the right choices? And for me, it was something that I really kind of had to figure out over quite a long period of time. And it didn't, maybe there is no way to necessarily figure that out straight away. Maybe some people do have clarity of, clarity in what career they want to go down. For me, it's something that just really evolved and grew and developed over time, and maybe that was just my story and the way that it meant to happen. At the same time, maybe if I had more understanding of kind of like different career paths and how you can use your creativity and maybe take a slightly maverick or less trodden route as well, that might have been useful. I don't know, but but yeah, it's an interesting question.
I don't want to dig into your accounts, James, but I would be really interested to talk about how you make a living from following your passion. Is it audience-based? 30,000 followers on Instagram. You've written the book. Is it your audience who are interested in you that provide you with the income? Is it brand partnerships? How can you make a living out of being an adventurer?
It's quite a tricky thing to achieve. I make most of my money by writing for outdoor magazines and outdoor publications. So actually, when I was back in Birmingham working for the charity, I realized I have a love for writing and being creative, and I did a journalism course in my part-time around the job, qualified as a journalist, worked at a newspaper for a few years and sort of transitioned into being a professional journalist. And when I moved to the Lake District, I wanted to try and figure out if I could make money writing about the things that I'm passionate about. So I kind of had a background in it, and now I'm able to make money from it. And I'm a freelancer. I'm self-employed, completely self-employed, and write for different niche publications, really, print magazines as well as websites about my hobbies. And then I've kind of got my fingers in quite a few different pies, like you say. So I have that journalism, I have my own book, and then because I have a bit of a following, I sometimes do brand partnerships or I'm really hesitant to say that I'm an influencer without a massive amount of hate sort of descending on me, but I don't advertise unethical diet pills, just to clarify that.
Is it you kind of looking stylish on the top of a mountain?
That kind of thing, yeah. Yeah.
One leg up on on a tree trunk.
Yeah. Something like that. But yeah, I've managed to make a living now of my passion. I absolutely love my job, and gone from kind of feeling a little bit unfulfilled and a little bit unhappy in my career quite a few years ago to now being utterly content and really happy with my job and really enjoying what I get to do for a living. It hasn't been easy to get to this stage. So I've been writing for magazines for maybe 5-6 years, and at least for I'd say 4 of those years I had a part-time job alongside that was helping pay my bills. So again, it was kind of like a transitioning period. I wasn't able to kind of quit a normal 9-to-5 employed job and then suddenly make enough money to live off my passion. So I've kind of slowly built it up over time.
So who's your audience then? Who's reading the articles? Who's buying the book? Who's following you on Instagram? Is there a demographic that is your demographic?
I guess it's mostly people that are interested in walking, hill walking mostly, and mountains, people that are intrigued by adventure. So it's kind of an adventure community, I guess. So the people that buy my book are probably the same people that read these niche magazines about hill walking and camping and adventuring. So that's my kind of core audience, I guess. In terms of demographics, it's kind of relatively even split, I think, in terms of gender, probably more, slightly more men than women, and kind of a age range relatively kind of similar to my own age, but perhaps like 25 to 45 or something like that. This is kind of an approximation, but yeah, that's probably the type of people that are, I guess, some people are interested simply because they like walking and hill walking. Other people might be more intrigued by the life transformation, so to speak, and how you go about escaping the rat race and how you go about kind of changing your life. So there's kind of both aspects, really.
That's the reason I ask, because I'm working with a few people through Sound Rebel at the moment who have got not the same stories, of course, but similar stories. Whereas we, you know, kind of touches on what we were talking about earlier, the aspiration used to be that you get a stable job and you rise through the ranks and your salary increases and you make bonuses and you got the nice house and the nice car, as we've discussed. But it does feel like more and more that the aspiration does seem to be, especially for men in their 30s, it does seem to be, I want to do something different. I want to live a more adventurous life. I work with a guy called Freddie Bennett, who he presents a podcast that I produce called Over the Influence about giving up alcohol. He was a city centre worker in London, management consultant, boozing every night. He decided to knock alcohol on the head. And since then, he's run the Sahara Desert and the Marathon des Sables. He's currently planning a rowing trip across the Atlantic. I say rowing trip. It's not, that makes it sound like a nice paddle. It's not. He's trying to break the record with 3 other guys rowing across the Atlantic. Started working with a guy called Jay Worthy, who was he's got a podcast called 28 Summers. And his story is that he was living in Chicago with his young family. He was the CEO of a $1 billion company, realized this is not how I want to live my life. And now he's very much encouraging people to adventure as much as they can, you know, not necessarily, you know, pack everything in, but he's very into the kind of the health benefits of being outdoors. And we've all got the opportunity to get into, you know, jump on a train and go somewhere for the weekend. You don't have to have these big adventurous plans to be adventurous. Do you feel like you are an inspiration to people, or are you just doing this for you?
Good question. I kind of feel like I'm just a kind of normal guy, like an average Joe kind of a person. So sometimes I don't think my journey is like incredibly, Yeah, sometimes I think that anyone could do it. It's not actually kind of super impossible to achieve. So I think that's what's quite appealing to people. So in some ways, it's a slight dichotomy that the actual most inspiring thing is that it's not actually that difficult to do it, which kind of makes me like not inspiring, but inspiring at the same time. Because like you were saying, that leap of faith you have to go through, it is terrifying in some ways. But at the same time, when you do it, you feel like you massively built it up as this humongous hurdle that was going to be such an important decision. And it's so vital and important not to get wrong. But in reality, it doesn't feel like that when you go down that road. And that's kind of quite powerful. I mean, I've always liked to kind of talk about my journey and encourage people to think about their own lives. At the same time, I always don't want to necessarily give the wrong impression that everyone has to make a really drastic change in their lives. So for me, this is what worked for me. I don't have any kids. I'm relatively like footloose. The kind of process for me is perhaps much easier than someone else in a different life situation. And other people might quite enjoy their jobs, but they just want a slightly better work-life balance or some sort of tweaking to their life rather than some flipping it upside down and having a crazy change. And that's why I like to say that everyone's journey is different. So some people, it might just be about changing their working hours. For some people, it might be about moving to a different place, moving out of a city and moving to the countryside. For some people, it might be switching their job, but everything else in their life, their relationships, their house, their family, their hobbies are all really good. It's like really bespoke to each individual person. And I guess hopefully I just had the kind of bravery to look at my own life and try and take the path that I wanted to and that I thought would be best for me. And so that's really the kind of main message. Anyone can do the same, but it's just about, no one can tell you what to do for your life. It's kind of it's about figuring it out for yourself, I guess.
Hi, I'm Salma.
And I'm Shweb.
We're student fundraisers talking to you about the Assisted Places Fund.
So, I suppose you're wondering, why should you donate to the Assisted Places Fund?
Essentially, we want to help give others the opportunities we were both fortunate enough to have and give them access to our wide-ranging curriculum and ambitious co-curricular programme.
Thank you for listening. And to give, visit the Old Edwardian website.
James, your modesty is very appealing, but what you've achieved is not normal. I think I'd like to say that very directly at this point, because obviously you're not just going out there and, you know, every now and then you'll go on a walk and, you know, put your leg up on that tree trunk and take a picture with a Berghaus fleece on. And, you know, you're not doing that. You are breaking records. You are doing things that people have never achieved before. Where does that come from? Where does that drive come from?
Well, I've always been sporty, like I said, growing up as a kid and during my time at King Edward's. So I think I've brought that sporty determination and that competitive edge from sport to my adventuring. So I almost treat some of my hikes and adventures as in the same way that a sportsman might. And I think that helps me kind of love these big, arduous physical challenges as well. So I get a real buzz from the exercise, I get a real sense of achievement from making it to the finish line. So that style of adventuring isn't for everyone, but for me, that works really well. And I also feel like I've always been really achievement orientated, and maybe that comes from having been at a school that demands high standards. You get self-worth and value from succeeding and getting good grades or making it to this team or that team or succeeding in some way in life. And so I've always kind of had that within me. That's quite an intrinsic thing. So I've really kind of pushed that, and that's always driven me to kind of try and take on these crazy, crazy challenges.
Can you tell us what's next? Or is that top secret?
No, it's not top secret. I generally kind of don't do many hardcore adventures during the winter. So generally kind of sit at my desk a bit more and crack on with work and take things a bit easier. So that's probably what I'll do during the winter, and then come up with some big plans for 2022. I'd love to do some long hikes abroad. Obviously last few years haven't been able to get abroad, and so I'd love to do some hiking in the Alps perhaps. But
is this just so you can turn around and say to your brother, look, I am the bloody mountain man?
Exactly. I need to get over like 3,000 meters or something, just to change his opinion. But yeah.
The Hillboy is a very funny name.
Yeah. What's annoying is that when I do sometimes do talks at adventure festivals and things like that, all the jokes that I write just get, you know, a little bit of a laugh, but the actual one joke that my brother actually invented is the one that gets all the best laugh, the Hillboy joke. So yeah, he's winning at that one as well.
I'd like to, obviously, you know, your adventures are long, arduous, challenging. Writing a book must be long, hard and challenging. I feel like it's one of those things that everybody says, or a lot of people go, I'd love to write a book one day. And they sit down and, I mean, I am speaking from experience here. You sit down and you start writing, you go, oh, blimey neck, 70,000 words is a lot of words. How did you find the experience of writing the book? Obviously you said you've got a background in journalism, but it's a very different process writing something like that as opposed to shorter articles for magazines.
For sure. It's quite, like you say, it's quite a daunting prospect. And it was a real mix. I loved the process of kind of reminiscing about this adventure that I'd been on, trying to kind of put my experience onto the page. It was quite therapeutic, kind of actually analysing and piecing together the puzzle of my life and how it ended up in this position and what it all meant and what perhaps lessons could be portrayed to the readers. So that was really amazing, and that was really a positive experience. When you get writer's block and you're there for the sixth day of the week sitting down trying to churn out another chapter, and it can become a real grind and a lot of hard work. So it was like highs and lows. It was amazing at times and utterly infuriating at others. And it's a really long project as well to get through. So I quite like having kind of shorter assignments where I can do it, get stuck into it, but cross it off the to-do list and tick it off quite quickly. I kind of enjoy that. Whereas this is, you start and 9 months later or a year later, you still haven't finished. This is such a long process. Perhaps why I haven't written a second book yet, because this book actually came out in 2019. But I'm really proud that I did it. And yeah, it was a bit of a life goal for me. So it feels amazing when you get that first copy in your hand and get to look at it and you actually achieved it. So that was pretty epic.
Did you have a publisher on board from the start, or did you write it and then try and find someone to get it out there? Did you self-publish?
No, I had a publisher, and I was lucky to get a publisher on board before I started writing it. And that was kind of just a little bit of luck, maybe, like right place, right time. So because I'm a journalist, I'm linked into a few of these networks, and I'm part of a organization called the Outdoor Writers and Photographers Guild, which is a body that represents people that write about the outdoors. And I'd heard from them that this one particular publisher was looking to expand its portfolio of outdoor books and was accepting pitches. And I just, on a whim, I decided to send it off. And I'd just completed this big adventure where I'd walked the 446 mountains across England and Wales. And it'd been this challenge to integrate a really big adventure around your everyday life, and they seemed to like the idea, and the book happened. So that was kind of how it worked for me. Definitely self-publishing, I think, is a great option as well these days, because if you get it right, you can keep a lot more of the profits and potentially make it work sort of better financially. Obviously it comes with certain challenges, but seems like a really great option these days.
So the 446, is that all the mountains in England and Wales then? Because I was thinking, how did you choose the 446, and did you start with the smallest?
It's a very geeky subject, the definition of a mountain, and there's surprisingly little agreement on what actually constitutes a mountain. But perhaps the most accepted list of mountains in England and Wales is a list known as the Nuttalls. It was first published in these two books by a couple called John and Anne Nuttall, and they define a mountain as any peak of 2,000 feet or more with a 50-foot drop on all sides. So their definition, that's their kind of mathematical definition of a mountain, and there's 446 of those over across England and Wales. And I own those books, and back in 2017 had this idea, I wonder whether I could climb all of those on my days off from work and at the weekends and in my annual leave, just in one kind of big unified adventure. And that's what I decided to do.
But you did it within 6 months, is that
right? Yeah, yeah.
And that was on your time off?
Yeah.
Because I'm thinking 6 months is what? 6 times 30, 180?
Yeah.
180-ish days. So what's that? How many mountains were you climbing a day?
You can climb quite a lot of them in one day once you get up to a kind of ridge and kind of stay high and go from one peak to the next. I forget how many I did on average. I think it was about 80 days of walking or something like that. So, like a good number of mountains on average. It was, looking back on it now, it was a amazing adventure, slightly kind of unhinged and calamitous and chaotic in some ways. But what I loved about it is that I got to see so many different parts of the UK. I got to go to loads of new places that I've never been to before. I camped high up in the hills, had some amazing experiences, amazing sunsets, amazing sunrises. It really, that was my adventure to help me cope with the prospect of having kind of done this gap year and come back to normality. And I actually felt like that year in 2017 was kind of as adventurous and as fulfilling as enjoyable as my gap year. And so that was a kind of experiment that worked out really well, and the conclusion was that you don't have to go halfway across the world or spend £20,000 or, you know, do something crazy. You don't have to kind of like wrestle crocodiles in the Amazon rainforest to kind of really have that dose of adventure in your life. And yeah, it was an experiment and it worked out really well. And I've kind of been continuing on that journey since.
So if anyone listening would like to read about the calamity and the chaos, the book's called Mountain Man.
Yeah, it's called Mountain Man. It's available in there might be a few hardback copies still available, but it's also been released now as a paperback. It's on Amazon. It's probably the best place to buy it. You can put a little bit of money in my pocket and probably quite a lot of money in Jeff Bezos's pocket, but that that's how publishing works. But yeah, it'd be amazing if some people enjoyed the book and supported it. I've tried to write it in a really honest and kind of personal way about my journey, but also hopefully quite entertaining and funny anecdotes about my adventures and the things that went wrong. So fingers crossed it's a good read.
And I can't help but feel like the next one has got to be on its way, because since then, as I mentioned right at the very beginning, you've done the full 1001 mountains across England, Wales, Scotland, Ireland. You've broken the three peaks record unsupported.
Yeah.
Surely the next one. Yeah, you've got to get laptop back out, James.
Yeah, probably. I've certainly been on some big adventures since then. So I climbed all the Munros, for example, in Scotland, which is amazing, and was an amazing adventure. And Scotland is kind of on a different level, really, to England and Wales. And then, yeah, this year I set off on a really long walk from Ben Nevis to Snowdon via Scarfell Pike. So that was my big adventure for 2021, a long 500-mile hike from between the three highest mountains in England, Scotland and Wales. And that was a kind of very different to my other trips, but it was a really fantastic experience. And I really felt like I experienced the real breadth of the UK. It was strange going from incredible remote mountains in the Highlands to suddenly walking through a council estate in Glasgow. I had such variety on that walk, and initially I thought I wouldn't like that I would really crave the wilder places, but I actually loved the variety.
It must have been really odd for people to see you doing that, you know, kind of in a right city centre, and there's you with your hiking boots on, your rucksack.
Yeah, it was a bit strange because sometimes I walk through cities where at a strange time, like 9 p.m. on a Friday night, and everyone's kind of dressed up and ready to get for a good night out on the town. There was me in my hiking boots and waterproofs with a slightly dishevelled look on my face, trying to find the travel lodge or what have you. So, yeah, I certainly didn't fit in at those occasions.
James, I've really enjoyed speaking to you. Thank you so much for your time today. Before you go, there's something I ask everybody, and it's quite simply, what characteristic would you say has served you best since leaving school, going from, you know, through the career that you were there for a decade, making that change, taking that leap and living the dream now, you know, following your passion, living it every single day? Not a qualification, not a certificate, not a person, but what would you say kind of inside you, what characteristic has served you best in the years since leaving school?
Oh, that's an interesting one. I'd probably say actually not to take yourself too seriously and to have a laugh and to take the mick out of yourself and to kind of enjoy joking about and having a laugh, really. Because I think if you take life too seriously, you can get really caught up in your own little world and how serious it is and things like that. And I've always loved kind of just trying to have quite a kind of lighthearted approach to life and the way I think about myself. And maybe that has served me quite well. That's off the top of my head. Maybe that's a terrible answer. I don't know, but
no, it's great. It's great. It's funny. The variation of stuff you get when I ask that question is lovely.
Okay.
Every answer is a good answer.
Okay, good.
James Forrest, the Mountain Man. Thank you so much for your time and speaking to me today here on Ed Talks.
Thank you, Ben. Appreciate it. I enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Ed Talks. I hope that you've enjoyed today's conversation. If you have, it would be great if you could subscribe to this podcast on whatever app you're listening on, so you can keep up to date with future episodes. And if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, then we'd really appreciate it if you could leave your feedback in the review section. If you're listening on a platform where you can't leave your comments, then please do email me with your feedback. My email address is ben@soundrebel.co.uk. If you would like to feature on this podcast as a guest, then please email Adelaide Bailey at the Development Office. Her email address is aab@kes.beham.sch.uk. That's aab@kes.beham.sch.uk. She's also the person to email with any news that you think should be featuring in Old Ed's publications, either in print or online. Finally, if you think a podcast would enhance the communications of your business, organisation or charity, then I'd love to talk to you about producing it. My email address again is ben@soundrebel.co.uk. Thank you again for listening, and I hope you'll join me again.